is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. This November, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $3,000 off the CT, the best shooting machine in the world. And you can also get $1,000 off their home machine. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. You can also check out their holiday gift guide to make shopping for the hooper in your life as easy as can be.
Hi, this is Jason Franzen from Third Side Basketball Academy, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are jumping on to do a special Hoopheads Pod Thanksgiving edition tonight. So we're going to try something new. We're going to do a list of things that we are thankful for and also a list of things that we are not thankful for. And both Jason and I each have three things on each list. We're going to go through and compare our thankful lists, and we'll talk about each one of those, and then we'll talk about our anti-thankful list. Or maybe we'll do it in some other order. I don't know, but Jason's got a game for us to start us off.
Of course. Of course.
All right.
We have our win shares, and I'm going to select something, and this might be a prelude to something I'm going to talk about later, Mike. I want the top five players in win shares for the Sacramento Kings. We're going to go Sacramento Kings, and this does include the Kansas City Kings as well and the Cincinnati Royals, just so it's clear.
Oh, Mike. It does. Okay.
Yes.
Oscar Robertson.
Okay, there you go. That was the number one. I told you were going to get one right out the gate. Go ahead.
Archibald.
He's number six.
Oh, man. Okay. Chris Webber.
He's number 11.
Really? Mike Bibby?
Mike Bibby is not on this list.
So there's nobody from that era of the Sacramento Kings? Peja Stojakovic?
He's number four. Peja Stojakovic. The rest of the guys are not from the Sacramento Kings.
So I have, how many do I have in the top five?
Two.
So you're asking me to go with the Omaha, Kansas City Kings, and the Cincinnati Royals?
Yeah, I think you could get one of them.
Reggie Theus?
Nope.
Otis Birdsong?
Nope. None of these guys are in the top 12.
Okay. I'm trying to think of who even would have played
the number two guy I've heard of before.
Okay.
He played... Oh, God. All right. So he was drafted in the 1955 draft. So this might have actually been...
Okay.
This is what I've heard of, Mike. I've heard of this guy.
You've heard of him.
I've heard of him. He went to Cincinnati. He grew up in Pittsburgh. He was drafted by
He went to the University of Cincinnati.
Yep. He was drafted by the Rochester Royals. They moved around a lot, didn't they?
Yeah.
He's 6'6", 210, small forward and shooting guard. Doesn't have a nickname apparently.
As soon as I hear this one, I'm going to know it. And it's going to probably
He's a Hall of Famer. He's a six-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA.
Oh, man, I should know. I know as soon as I hear it, I'm going to I have nothing. You can just give them to me because I'm not going to.
Number two, Jack Twyman.
Okay. Yep.
So that was that guy.
Then for the name. Yep.
That's one I had heard of.
I can't say I'm intimately familiar with Jack's work, but definitely have heard the name.
Okay, Bobby Wanzer.
Never heard of him.
Number three, and then number five is Jerry Lucas.
Jerry Lucas, Ohio State.
Yeah, there you go.
When did Jerry Lucas play for?
I'll tell you. Hold on. My computer is not cooperating with me. Well, Jerry Lucas, he played for the Cincinnati Royals. He was the first round pick, sixth pick in the 1962 NBA draft. He was a territorial selection. That was when they were doing territorial selections. He was in the NBA 75th anniversary team, Mike.
Oh, yeah, Jerry Lucas is good. I'm not saying he's not good. I just didn't realize he played at all for the Kings / Royals franchise.
He played for them from 63 to 70.
Okay, wow.
A majority of his career, actually. 63 to 70. He did not play in 62 and 63 because of contractual issues. He was a holdout. Right,
there you go. Nice.
So there you go, Mike.
All right.
Well, you got two of them. The only other recent one was Mitch Richmond. He was on the list. Okay.
Mitch Richmond would have been a good one.
He's number.
I thought for sure Tiny Archibald would be in the top five, but I guess
Sam Lacy was seven. Mitch Richmond was eight. So there you go. The Sacramento
Kings.
Weber.
No Weber is surprising.
I mean, they were terrible.
No, they weren't. Not while Weber was there.
But he...
Weber was with the run-and-gun Kings. I mean, if Stojakovic is number four, it's hard to believe that Stojakovic was that much more valuable than Weber or Bibby.
Not on the list.
No?
Not on the list. Man.
He's got the best highlight film of any of those guys, I'll tell you that.
All right, Mike. I think we're going to move on to our topic at hand tonight. And our topic at hand is, what are we thankful for and what are we not thankful for? I think we want to start with the positives, right? We're going to start with the positives.
That sounds good. Are we going to alternate?
Sure. And I'm going to go somewhere, like, I've got a predictable one, but I'm going to save that one. I'm going to go somewhere else.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
And I'm taking it a little bit of a different, you know, different take, like, angle.
Okay.
I'm thankful that Paolo Banchero is going to be really, really good. And let me explain. Paolo Banchero is averaging 23 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, almost a whole block per game, shooting 46%. Mike, I'm just happy that someone I predicted when we predicted the draft and I said, if I was going to take someone, that's the guy I would take because he played for Duke. And I'm just happy because of my predictions last year being god-awful that I actually got something correct. He's going to be really, really good. I think he could be, like, he could be really good. He could be a guy like Evan Mobley who could potentially be a MVP candidate one day. I genuinely believe that. I think he's that good. Now, the Magic have to get better, and there's lots of things going around with that. But I really, really have enjoyed watching highlights. Now, I can't say that I've watched many Orlando Magic games in full, but just seeing what I have seen from him so far between highlights, looking at his stats, he looks really, really good, and I think that he could be a difference maker and maybe actually make the Orlando Magic a team again. You didn't think I was going to start off with Paolo Banchero and my what am I thankful for list?
No, that was good. I like it. I think one of the things that when I was going through and considering what to be thankful for, one of the things that I considered that didn't make my list was just the quality of the young players in the league right now, whether you want to comp that as rookies, second-year players. I just feel like there's a ton of guys who are in their first, let's say, 4 years in the league who are just fantastic, and certainly Banchero fits into that mold. And I think you're 100% right when you say that he's got the potential eventually to be a guy who can be an MVP. And I know we've talked about him before, some of the things that he's doing. One, just his ability. Again, they're a bad team, but the fact that he's orchestrating most of the offense as the point guard when he's been on the floor, most of the offense in the half court is being initiated through him. And so you think about, a guy who's 19 years old as a pick and roll ball handler at 6'10" to be able to do what he's done on the high volume of shots that he's taking and just his usage rate. And then you think about his ability to get to the free throw line, which I think he's averaging somewhere around 8 free throws a game, which if you look back in the history of the game, guys that get to the free throw line at that level as rookies, that's a very, very small list. And the fact that he already knows how to use his body, and he's got a body that most NBA players would be jealous of at age 19, tells you that as he fills up into his frame and just gets to what he's going to be physically, where he is already at 19 speaks very, very well of what he's going to become in the future. I think the big thing with him that's going to take him to the next level is, where does that jump shot, where does his three-pointer end up settling in? Can he be an above average three-point shooter? Does he need to be? If he continues to develop and can get to the rim and continue to get to the line, that obviously increases your efficiency tremendously when you can get 8 to 10 free throws a game as a lead ball handler. But I definitely think that what you've seen so far from Banchero certainly would lead you to believe that he has the potential to be an MVP candidate at some point in the future. I think what's interesting is when you look back on the history of the league, and this is something where it comes down to trying to evaluate where these guys are and what they can eventually become. It's so hard to make historical comparisons because these guys are coming into the league
in a different era.
Yeah, it's so early. Although, look, Garnett and Kobe came into the league right out of high school in the 90s. LeBron obviously comes in the early 2000s, and it still took those guys a number of years to be able to get to the point that they eventually got in their career to become the dominant players that they were. Everybody knew right from the jump that those guys had the potential to do that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what we're talking about here with Banchero and Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham and Scotty Barnes and whoever else you want to throw in there. But it just feels like there's a leap from this guy's going to be an all-star player, which I think that we agree that all those guys are probably going to be all-star players at some point in their career and probably multi-time all-stars. There's a big leap from there to saying they're going to be in the MVP discussion. They're going to be a top five player in the league. Like, there's not that many guys that get to that level. I think the one thing, at least let's think about those four guys, Banchero, Mobley, Scotty Barnes, and Cade Cunningham. The one thing that sets them apart and maybe gives them an opportunity to possibly get into that discussion at some point in their career is just the fact that they all have size. And typically, if you look back over the last 25, 30 years, the guys that are typically in the MVP discussion are guys that are 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", that have the kind of size that the guys that we're talking about that they have. And so I think those guys are all, like I said, future all-stars. Can they at some point get into the MVP discussion? I don't think it's out of the question for any of those guys. So yeah, I think Banchero, based on what he's done coming out of the gate, and I know he's been hurt and not been on the floor as much as Orlando would like to see him out on the floor, but certainly, yeah, I think that he's definitely a guy that we should be thankful for, because he's going to be somebody that's going to be fun to watch for the next 15 years, I'm sure.
Yep, I agree. All right, what's your first one, Mike?
All right, I'm going to stay on the Orlando Magic.
Oh, Bol Bol. God bless America.
Ha ha. I am thankful for Bol Bol. So, if we go back to the 2019 NBA draft, and I can still remember you and I talking about this. This is in the early days of the podcast, and I was stumping for the Cavs to take Bol Bol, I believe, at number 5 initially.
Yeah, but
where we took Darius
Garland.
I
think we got the better player. Okay.
I think we got the better player. I agree. I completely agree. However, we did. You know who we drafted in that draft?
At
number 28. No, don't look it up, man.
I'm not. It's Windler. Right?
Windler. 26. We drafted Dylan Windler.
Yeah.
I'd rather have Bol Bol. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Okay, Bol Bol right now currently. Like, I know this is his first real crack at playing time. I still have no idea. Can someone please explain to me?
Didn't we have Kevin Porter Jr. that year too? We drafted Kevin Porter Jr.
I believe we did. Let me see that.
Back in.
I'm pretty sure we did. Let me just double check because I have the draft pulled up here. Yes, the Bucks drafted Kevin Porter Jr. and then he was officially traded to the Cavs after first being dealt to the Pistons. So, but eventually it was known that we were getting Kevin Porter Jr. So anyway, all right. Bol Bol. First time he's really getting some legitimate playing time. Can we get Mike Malone on the phone in Denver and figure out why they didn't want to play this guy? Like, it makes no sense. You watch his highlights. You watch the guy shoot the ball. You watch the way he handles the ball. You watch what he can do defensively, altering shots at his size. Now, look, I said it last week. He could collapse and go down with an injury tomorrow. Who knows? But right now, this current season, Bol's averaging 13 a game, 8 rebounds. He's blocking like 2.5 shots a game. There's probably the number of players that have a more exciting highlight reel this year. You could probably count on one hand. Just the things that he does at his size are unbelievable. And if you're Orlando, you got to be unbelievably excited that this guy kind of fell into your lap, that the trade to Detroit fell through because he didn't pass the physical. He's just been great. And you look at his skill set, and everybody's all excited about Wembanyama, and rightfully so. Bol Bol has a very similar skill set to Wembanyama in terms of his build, his frame, his ability to shoot the ball, his ability to handle the ball. I mean, I can't even tell you how many highlights I've watched now of him grabbing a defensive rebound or blocking a shot and going the length of the floor with a behind-the-back dribble or going between the legs and taking the ball all the way to the rim. And I know he's not a perfect player, but this guy's really good. So when I think about Bol Bol and I look back at that draft, okay, there's guys, I mean.
What number did he end up taking again?
44. 44.
Okay,
so I'm going to give you a list of guys that, let's just go through. We're just going to go through the guys here and tell me whether you'd rather have Bol or the guy that I'm talking about. Okay, DeAndre Hunter.
For the totality of their career?
I'm telling you, for the totality of their career, like going forward from this day forward. All right, well, let's start. Okay, let's go right to the very top of the draft. Zion,
I want.
Ja Morant.
I want Ja.
RJ Barrett. All right, we're at number three and we're already pausing. I think I'd rather have Bol. Okay, keep going. DeAndre Hunter.
I probably want Hunter.
It's close. Darius Garland.
I want Garland.
Okay. Culver. Another guy I liked, unfortunately. I think we take Bol Bol. Kobe White.
Bol Bol.
Jackson Hayes.
Well, just because of the person, I'm going to take Bol Bol.
Rui Hachimura.
Come on. Oh, come on. Rui's having a good old time.
Okay, moving on. Cam Reddish.
Wait, come on. Wait, Mike. Wait. We've got to take this into perspective, though. Bol Bol, this has been one season.
Like, I'm just asking. Look, I'm asking the question. I'm not saying.
How long is he going to be in the league, Mike?
Tell me who you want. Do you want Hachimura moving forward, or do you want Bol Bol?
I think I want Hachimura.
Okay, fine. Cam Reddish.
I don't want Cam Reddish. Ship him off the...
Cam Johnson.
He's been pretty good.
Yeah, you want Cam Johnson, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been a solid contributor to a winning team. PJ Washington.
He's been okay, but
good player.
Yeah. He's
Bol
he's
has a higher ceiling.
Yeah, he's a fringe.
Washington's going to play in the league for 10 years. So, yeah. You could make an argument that maybe you want Washington. Tyler Hero?
Oh, I want Tyler Hero. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Romeo Langford.
Who?
Romeo Langford.
Who? I don't know who that is.
Sekou Doumbouya.
Isn't that Sekou Diomba?
Yeah, whatever his name. Yeah,
I he's not very good. So,
Chuma Okeke.
Who? No, don't want him.
I think he's still on the Magic.
Okeke. Oh, he's on the Magic too, man.
He's still on the Magic. Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Not him.
Goga Baditsa.
Who?
Goga Baditsa.
I don't know who that is.
Luka Samanik.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Doncic. No.
No. Matisse Thybulle.
I probably want Thybulle.
No.
What?
Thybulle has no offense, man. Thybulle's not even playing for this crap Sixers team. Brandon Clark.
He played tonight, didn't he?
Brandon Clark. I don't think so. Brandon Clark.
That was hilarious. You saw that, right?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
No Embiid, no Hart.
We could talk about that at some point. We'll get to that.
I do have something on the not thankful for our list that we can loop that in.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Brandon Clark.
No, don't want him.
You don't want Brandon Clark?
I mean, I guess he's okay, right?
I don't know. He's close. I mean, you might want Brandon Clark. I mean, his ceiling's not as high as Bowles, but Brandon Clark's been a really good player. Grant Williams?
Oh, wow. I probably want Grant Williams if he's healthy, right?
It's close. Again, I think Bowles has probably a higher ceiling, but Grant Williams has done it at a higher level to this point. Darius Bazley?
Who?
Darius Bazley, Thunder.
That name doesn't resonate with me.
No,
When I'm saying who, I'm not being cheeky. I'm just saying
Ty Jerome.
I
Nasir Little.
Nasir Little. Ooh, Nasir Little. He was LeBron wanted. LeBron wanted that guy when he went to Portland. He's like, oh, that's gonna be a good pick.
Nasir Little's good. I mean, he's fine. He's fine. Right. He's a good role player. Dylan Windler.
No. He spends more time on the injury report than Zion.
Yeah, he does. I agree. Mafiondo.
Wait, that's a question. That's a good question. Has Dylan Windler or Zion played more games? It's got to be Zion, right?
I would think so, yeah. Windler's been out a ton. Plus, Windler gets a lot of DMPs anyway. Miafundu Kabengle.
I don't even know that name.
Jordan Poole.
I want Jordan Poole.
Yeah. Keldon Johnson.
Ooh. Keldon Johnson's been pretty solid.
Keldon Johnson's good. That's close. That's close. Kevin Porter Jr. You want Bowl. Porter Jr. is never going to make it. Nick Claxton. Bowl. KZ Akpala.
Who? Oh, yeah. I know that guy. Osko. Yeah.
Yeah. He went to the Heat. I don't know if he's still in the league or not. Carson Edwards.
No.
Bruno Fernando.
No, he
Marcos
was on...
Luzada Silva.
Okay, I think you've proved your point. Really quickly, just so you
Wait,
know.
We're almost there. We're almost there. Cody okay. Martin.
He's been okay, but not good.
He's been okay. Davidis Servitus.
Who?
Daniel Gafford.
No.
Daniel Gafford.
No.
Daniel Gafford's still in the league. Alan Simaljic.
No.
Justin James.
No.
Eric Pascal.
He's been okay.
Functional NBA player.
Yeah.
Admiral Schofield. Still in the league. Functional. Jalen Noel.
No.
That's it. Bowl.
Okay, just so you know, it's much closer in the Zion versus Windler than you would think.
Is it?
Windler's played in 81 games.
Okay.
Zion's played in 97.
Okay, wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, again, Windler has got a lot of DMPs and he's been hurt a lot. So, all right. So my point is there's only three guys that you would clearly, without even hesitating, maybe four if you count Hero, that you would
clearly
take. Oh, come on, Mike,
you're not going to take Bol Bol over Hero. Come on. Listen, I know you're on a toot your own horn here, but come on, man.
All right, there's four guys.
So Zion, Ja.
Morant, Garland, and Tyler Hero.
You would, wait. There was one other one. You wouldn't want Jordan Poole? Jordan Poole I'd want over
Bol
Bol.
Oh, yeah, I'll give you Jordan Poole.
Man, listen, he got punched by Draymond and is still playing basketball with him. I respect that man.
All right, let's say at the worst, Bol should have been the 10th pick at the worst. At worst.
Yeah.
At worst. Okay. Look, I'm just happy the guy's playing. I just think his skill set is completely unique. I hope he stays healthy and – again, we put him together with your guy, Banchero. You put him with Franz Wagner. Suggs starts to right the ship. Orlando's got a good future. I think they have some exciting guys. They've got some guys that are, I think, real building blocks to putting together a real team that when you project forward, you can see the makings of a team that can win at a high level if they can keep those guys together and they continue to develop the way that it looks like they probably can. So I'm just happy that the guy's playing. I think the fact that he rotted in Denver for 4 years and who knows what his health related issues are. Obviously he failed his physical with the Pistons last year when they made that trade. So clearly there are some medical issues there, which we don't know for sure what the entirety of those are, But when this guy's on the floor, he's exciting. He does things at his size that almost nobody in the history of the game has been able to do. And he's just fun to watch. So I'm excited to see where his future goes, because I've been stumping for him for 4 years. So Bol Bol, yeah. My first thankful thing.
My second thankful thing, Mike.
Okay.
I'm thankful that Colby Altman pulled the trigger and traded for Donovan Mitchell.
Okay.
The Cavs are obviously really, really good. Once again, it looks like they've rebounded from that West Coast funk they were in. I think the Cavs are still, I mean, they're in third place in the Eastern Conference. They are performing at a high level. I still don't think that they're obviously not 100%. I mean, I'm concerned about the amount of times that Darius Garland is getting smacked in the face. Like, I don't know if you saw it last night. He got smacked in the face again.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's concerning to me. I don't know why he seems to be attracting these smacks to the face. but I just think that what's really nice is while Donovan Mitchell seems to be the clear leader, there's so many people are just stepping up in different situations. Like the last two games, who stepped up big time, Mike? Who stepped up big time for the Cavs the last two games?
Chetty.
Okay. So I really, really think
they're so much better when he plays well.
Well, they are. They are. And they're so much better with I honestly think Lamar Stevens has to start. I think that has to happen. Because if Okoro can't start because he's so bad on the offensive end of the floor, Lamar Stevens can at least like make a defender play defense on him because he can actually attack the hoop and do something with it. He's looked really good the last two games since they moved him into the starting role. Obviously, you know, Love's thumb injury / finger injury is a little concerning, but he played last night and seemed to be okay. So I'm just thankful that Colby Altman pulled the trigger, took a leap at Donovan Mitchell, not knowing what that would look like. And they're just so much fun to watch. I mean, Mitchell's averaging 29.8 points per game, 4.3 rebounds, 6 assists. He's looked really, really good. When the Cavs have been good, I mean, he's been good even in the games we lost. But they're at their best when the two, him and Garland, are playing off one another, for sure. And it was nice the other night when, you know, against Miami, he clearly wasn't playing well. And they still managed to win. He only had 13 against Miami, and they still managed to win. But he just does so much for the team because he draws attention away from Garland. He draws attention away from Mobley. I mean, the amount of dunks that Mobley and Allen have had has to be, I don't know, I can't compare it to last year's stats and stuff, but they're dunking way more this year because there's so many open lanes for them. And I don't know, I'm sure you saw did you see the play at the end of the game where Allen threw it to Mobley? Or was it Mobley who threw it?
Yeah,
that
was sweet. Yeah, beautiful pass by Jared Allen. Beautiful pass.
Yeah, to Mobley, and he dunked it. I mean, there's just so many lanes because the two of them are so scary on the outside. Like, they're really good, Mike. And they were in that game against Milwaukee, despite the fact that they didn't play very well that game. So I have full faith and confidence that we're going to be good throughout the whole season. We might have our ups and downs, but I mean, theoretically, Mike, what should our record be right now? What should our record be? Like, how many games did we throw away? Like, four? I mean,
For sure you threw away the Clippers game. You blew the Warriors game, but I think you can attribute that to just a remarkable Steph performance. So I don't necessarily look at that one as one that we blew, even though we sort of blew it.
Should have beaten the Raptors,
Sacramento,
right?
Game is one that you had in the palm of your hand, had a 6-point lead in the fourth quarter, let that one slip away. Minnesota, you had guys hurt, you still almost came back and won it. So I think there's lots of reasons to be positive around the Cavs, and you laid out a bunch of them in terms of just what this team is, what they have. I like the balance between what the backcourt can do offensively is just unbelievable. I mean, any given night, those two guys can easily put up between 50 and 60 points, easily, night in and night out. And then you look at what Jared Allen and Mobley bring to you on the defensive end of the floor. They're just really hard to score on in the interior. And then Mobley is so good moving his feet. I mean, the one thing that defensively he sometimes kind of gets bullied when guys have a head of steam and they're going towards the basket and they can kind of ride him out and push him under the basket. But when this guy's just in space guarding a guy, it doesn't even look like he's moving his feet that fast, but he just has a way of being balanced and being fluid. And he's so long, he just gets to wherever that guy is that's going up for the shot, and he alters it in some way, whether that guy's at the rim, whether it's a jump shot. He just makes things very, very difficult for anybody who's trying to score against him. And then you mentioned it about the dunks. Both of those guys, Mobley just dunks. His arms are so long, and he just jumps. It's just, I mean, it looks like he's playing on like a six-foot basket. And Jared Allen is sort of the same way. I'd say Mobley is a more graceful dunker, and Jared Allen is more of a powerful dunker. But both of those guys are just incredible with what they do on the interior. And I think, as we've said over and over again on the podcast, Mobley is just scratching the surface. Still, at least 75% of the time he puts the ball on the floor in the half court and tries to dribble, it gets poked away from him. So if he can ever tighten up that handle where he can get to the basket and use some of his length to be able to finish over top of guys, because when he does put it on the floor and it doesn't get knocked away, he almost always generates a good shot. He doesn't make it every single time, but he almost always generates a good look. And if he can just tighten that part of his game up, the sky's the limit. Like he's such a good passer, such a good passer. Like I went live to that Heat game on Sunday, and watching him just handle the ball and the reads that he would make. So he'd catch the ball at the elbow, and even before he's getting the ball, like he already knows where he's going to spray that ball out to for a three, whether it was cross court, whether it was in the slot, whether he's hitting the near corner. I mean, his passing is really, really good. His vision, and he already does so many things well at the defensive end of the floor. It's hard to imagine. I mean, he's going to get better, but it's hard to imagine that he can get much better. But he has so much space to grow offensively, and yet he's still averaging, what, like 15 points a game. I just love what he does as a passer, because he's one of those guys you always hear about, the bigs who are kind of like the connective tissue between players, and you need somebody in that spot who can make good reads and make the right passes. And obviously Jokic is the gold standard of that type of player. And obviously Mobley's not at that level, but he can pass the ball and he sees things and he anticipates. And I just think that what they've put together is the team. They're still probably a guy away, a year away, another year of experience. They got to get a little playoff run, hopefully this year, but they're not that far away, and they're so young. Looking to grow your coaching? United Basketball Plus has over 3,000 plays and 45 deep dive courses with some of the best minds in the game, including Tyler Costin, Paul Kelleher, Tobin Anderson, Dave Love, and more. You can also view their United Basketball clinics and receive 50% off in-person clinics. United Basketball Plus has partnered with Jordan and Joe's Decision for their skill development curriculum. United Basketball Plus is a one-stop shop to help you grow as a coach, leader, and culture builder. Follow the link in the show notes and use the code CLINIC to receive an annual membership for just $50. All right, so that brings me to my second thankful point, which is just the general tenure of Kobe Altman and what he's been able to do to build this current iteration that we have of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And you look back at his very first move after becoming GM in 2017 was to trade away Kyrie Irving. And in addition to getting Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, we also got the Brooklyn first-round pick that turned into Colin Sexton, which eventually, along with some other things, turned into Donovan Mitchell. So I'd say that's a pretty good circuitous route from 2017 to 2022, but to be able to bring in Donovan Mitchell clearly in and of itself is something to be thankful for. And I go back and think about my initial reaction and how I was pretty lukewarm on the idea of Donovan Mitchell.
That you're overselling it. I think you were down. You were down on it.
My initial reaction was ugh. My very initial reaction when you told me was ugh. I wasn't excited about it. And I think part of it was it felt like Donovan Mitchell, at least all the reporting was that he wanted to go to New York. And so to me, it felt like, okay, we're bringing in a guy for 3 years. We've traded away 5 years of draft capital for a guy who isn't really going to want to be here. And that has proven to be almost the exact opposite. It feels like there's no place in the world that Donovan Mitchell would rather be than here in Cleveland playing with the guys that he's playing with. So I think if I had known that his excitement level would have been where it is, I think my reaction would have been slightly different. I still don't think that I realized after now watching Donovan Mitchell night in and night out, maybe you underestimated how good the guy was. I also do think that part of it is contextual, right? You got to play with the right mix of guys. And I think for him, playing next to Garland and playing with two guys who have the offensive capability of Allen and Mobley compared to playing with a guy with the offensive capability of Rudy Gobert has really unlocked who Mitchell can be. And he's been better on the defensive end than he was certainly in his last few years in Utah. So yeah, kudos to Kobe Altman and the Cavs for bringing in Donovan Mitchell. It could not have worked out any better. And then I just want to hit on a couple other moves that Kobe Altman has made over the course of his Cavaliers tenure as GM. Re-signing Kevin Love, which at the time looked like a crazy extension, looked like way too much money, and looked like something that was going to be an albatross. And certainly during Darius Garland's first year and Colin Sexton's second year, Kevin Love was not a very happy player here in the city of Cleveland. When he was slapping the ball away from when he was inbounding it and standing in the lane to get the 3 second call, calling for the ball, and just all the things that you and I on the podcast called him out for just being basically a terrible teammate at that point. But man, have things flipped and changed, and guy looks as happy as he's ever been. And he's clearly been an important component to what this team has been and what this team can be this season. And for the first time now, you're starting to hear people talk about, hey, are the Cavs maybe going to extend Kevin Love, which is crazy to think about a year or two ago. And the fact that the guy's still here and that Kobe Altman made that decision, look, it could have turned out really bad. And for a year or two, it looked like it was going to be bad. But man, this guy's been an important contributor. So I think that's another move that you have to say, wow, Kobe Altman pulled off something good there. And then you look at the drafts, and I think you had three top five picks. Darius Garland, clearly this guy's going to be a multi-time all-star. He's going to be one of the top, whatever number you want to put on there, 5-6 point guards in the league for the next 7-8 years. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Okoro, probably not what you would hope for out of a top five pick. However, I think when you start talking about that draft and you look at who was drafted behind him, it becomes a lot more defensible to have picked Isaac Okoro. So can I read you the next 10 picks after Isaac Okoro? Onyeka Okongwu.
Ugh.
Killian Hayes. Obi Toppin. Denny Avdia. Jalen Smith. Devin Vassell. Tyrese Halliburton. Kira Lewis. Aaron Nesmith. And Cole Anthony. So in a vacuum, regardless of what the prospects were of those guys coming in, if you just look at production to this point in the league, the only guys that you would take probably over Okoro based on their production, there's probably three. You'd probably take Okongwu. You'd probably take Devin Vassell. And clearly, I think the best player in that group is Tyrese Halliburton. But Vassell and Halliburton were not guys that were being considered for the top 10. Okongwu was probably the only one, and I don't think you'd take anybody else. And really, only Halliburton to this point has shown that he's going to be a guy that was what we would consider to be a top five NBA draft pick production-wise. Vassell has been good this year, but this is the first year he's really kind of taken a little mini leap. And Okongwu, I think, tops out as a quality energy center, but I don't know that he's ever going to be an all-star player. Good defender, good around the rim, but I don't know that he's ever going to be an all-star. So even though I'd like Okoro to be better, I do think that the pick at the time was defensible, and Okoro is still a guy who, if he can figure some things out offensively, might end up being okay. And then obviously the Evan Mobley pick is, I mean, it was a no-brainer just the way that draft worked out, but that guy has a chance to be historically good. So I'm thankful for Colby Altman, because what he's done as a GM has just been nothing short of miraculous when you think about the Cavs losing LeBron and then where we are today.
Yeah, I just want to go back really quickly to the Donovan Mitchell trade. I looked at the receipts here, Mike.
Okay.
I sent you the trade. You trusted Donovan Mitchell to Cleveland for Lauri Markkanen. Ogbaji, which he's been terrible, right? He is not. He's been.
He's done nothing. He's done nothing for them.
Colin nothing. Sexton, three unprotected first round picks and two pick swaps, and your response was ugh.
Yeah,
why?
That's what I said. Ugh.
Ugh, and why?
Yep.
So there you go.
I knew I said ugh, and like I said, my initial response, I would attribute that to two things. One, like I said, I feel like he's a guy that didn't necessarily want to be here. That would have been my initial thought before hearing all the things about him being on the golf course and knowing who was still
Here's
staying
the quote,
in Cleveland.
Brian Windhorst. I can't tell you how I know, but I'm aware that he found out. I'm aware of when he actually found out was when he was the trade was when he was from was on the golf course that and found out that Mobley, Allen, and Darius were not in the trade, and neither was Kevin Love. He went screaming around the golf course and was excited.
Yeah, I think once you find that out, that he's excited to be here, and that's proven to be true, and you can see it in the way that this team is together. I think the combination of that and then just looking at it, and he was a struggle the last year or two in Utah. He wasn't as good as he had been in those first couple years, and I just think I have a much more of appreciation for him now after having watched him play for 15 games and basically watched every minute of those games. He's been really, really good, and I think it helps the contextually, like I said earlier, him playing with Darius Garland and then with two bigs who have a little bit wider offensive repertoire than Rudy Gobert, I think has really unlocked what Mitchell can be. So great acquisition. Then the last thing I'll say about Colby Altman, the last piece of the puzzle is pulling Jared Allen out of the James Harden deal, and that's something that I think is completely underrated when you start talking about how do you jump in as that third team to help facilitate this or facilitate that. Like, that's the dream of all NBA general managers and teams, is that you can sort of be on the periphery of a trade and end up getting a piece that becomes really, really important. And the fact that Colby Altman was able to jump in there and steal Jared Allen away from the Nets in that particular deal just, again, cements how good he's been as a general manager. So not every move he's made has hit completely, but if you look at the complete track record, if you're a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, you have to be thankful for Colby Altman.
All right, perfect. All right, the last thing I'm thankful for, the Sacramento Kings. I am thankful that the Sacramento Kings are finally going to probably be a playoff team. I know I don't want to like jinx them too early, Mike, but I'm more thankful for the fan base of the Sacramento Kings, because they've been through some terrible, terrible times. Here's some stats I have for the Sacramento Kings. De'Aaron Fox, 25.4, 4.8, and 6.4 assists per game. Sabonis, 17, 10, and 6. Kevin Huerter, averaging 16.6 per game. Do you know what he's shooting from behind the arc, Mike?
Yeah, like 51%.
Well, he's down to 49.9% now. But as we were recording this episode, I don't know if it took into account today's game or not. But I'm thankful.
Which they won today.
Yeah, they did. Mike Brown effect. You saw what happened at the end of that game, right?
I saw Morant got fouled right on a three.
Well, so the previous play, Morant walked up to Malik Monk and said, "Don't screw this up." Malik Monk made his free throws, and then John Morant got fouled on a three, and he missed his free throw. So it was kind of funny that he said, don't mess it up, and then he messed it up. So anyways, listen, I'm thankful for the Sacramento Kings, more for the fan base of the Sacramento Kings. I'm thankful that they've stuck with their team. They almost got moved. Then they got a new arena. Then they've had some terrible, terrible teams and terrible luck. And they've got the savior, Mike Brown, at the helm. And that team, I'm not here to coach regular season games. I'm here to coach in the postseason. Mike Brown, the Sacramento Kings. First place in the Pacific. And then where are they at in the conference? They're in the top. They're near the top right now.
I think they're like five.
Yeah, there you go. Look at them. They are three in the Western Conference. Number three, the Sacramento
Kings. And Utah's number one. How about that? How much money could you have got on a bet there?
And Phoenix is number two. And I know that their over-under was still high, but who knew what that was going to look like? I mean, just look at the top of the West, Mike. You got Utah, Phoenix, Sacramento, the Clippers, who haven't had Kawhi Leonard.
Right, which is crazy because everybody's kind of down and said, oh, the Clippers, man.
The Pelicans.
They haven't really had it together.
Portland, Denver, and Dallas. You've got right now on the outside looking in, theoretically, right now in the play-in game, you've got Denver, Dallas, Memphis, and Minnesota. You have Golden State, the Lakers, and the three teams everyone expected to be out. Out. And I know you've expected the Lakers to be out, but you know what I mean? The Lakers, what's hilarious is the Lakers, they lost tonight, but they had won three in a row tonight, and they were still five games under 500. That's hilarious. Now they're six games under 500. So anyways, we don't need to talk about the Lakers. Maybe that'll be part of later. But I'm thankful for the Sacramento Kings and what they're doing right now. So,
All right, so here's what I'll say about Sacramento. I've always been a De'Aaron Fox fan. I know people have been down on him over the last couple of years, but I think when you look at playing in Sacramento with some of the things that have gone on there, with some of the coaching changes and just the weird ownership with Vivek and everything that goes along with playing in Sacramento, De'Aaron Fox is too talented of a guy. He has too many physical tools to be able to not be a high quality, high caliber NBA point guard. And I think this year, when you look at what they've been able to put around him and he started to flourish, then you have the Sabonis for Haliburton trade, which I think still probably is going to be a net loss for Sacramento, but Sabonis is still a good player. Haliburton is going to be a really good player for a really long time. Sabonis is a good player, has been a good player, and is probably going to continue to be one. He has limitations on the defensive end of the floor, but he's been a good fit with De'Aaron Fox, and he's a guy who has enabled them to have what I believe is still the number one offense in the league right now, which it may not stay there, but they have a good offense. And then you talk about Mike Brown, who is obviously here in Cleveland and is a guy who is a proven defensive coach, but he spent the last, whatever, 5-6 years with the Warriors, presumably learning some offense, if by nothing else, through osmosis of being around the Warriors. So the fact that Sacramento has the number one offense in the league, and the fact that Mike Brown has instilled and changed and improved their defense, I don't think this team is a fluke. You and I picked them way above their over, which was 33. We both thought that was way undervalued, and I think that's proven to be the case. I would expect this team probably not to finish in the top six, but I certainly don't think there's any chance of them falling out of the play-in, and they're probably more likely at this point, based on their start at least, to finish in the 7 or 8 slot than they are finishing the 9 or 10. So kudos to Sacramento. Haven't been to the playoffs since, I believe, 2006. So if they can make it there, the fan base, I'm sure, would be excited. They got some exciting players. They got guys that are fun to watch, and I've always kind of been partial to Sacramento for whatever reason. I think they've had some fun teams going all the way back to, as we talked about off the top, with the Weber, Bibby, White Chocolate, Peja Stojakovic, Vlade teams that were just fun teams to watch. And they played sort of a precursor to today's basketball in terms of moving the ball and shooting a lot of threes. So I'm excited for Sacramento. And yeah, I think that's definitely something that we can be thankful for.
Right, your last one, Mike.
All right, my last one that I'm thankful for. I am thankful for dysfunctional teams. And the dysfunctional teams that I am particularly thankful for.
Can we take a guess? The Lakers, Nets.
There's only three.
The Lakers, Nets, and the Sixers, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm thankful for all three of those teams. One, I'm thankful for the Lakers' dysfunction because, look, anytime the Lakers – and I grew up a Lakers fan in terms of loving Magic Johnson. But as you get older and you see kind of what the Lakers are, have become, I'm never sad to see the Lakers be less than what Lakers fans think that they should be. And look, Davis has been on fire. I don't know. What did he do tonight? Did Davis have a big night tonight? I don't even know.
Well, he needed to because LeBron's still not playing. So.
He had been averaging over the last three games. He had averaged like 38 and 18. I told you the last time that I've watched a couple Lakers games, including that Cavs game, and it looked like AD would rather be anywhere.
Davis, 37-21.
Okay, so another really good game for Anthony Davis.
Five steals.
So let's put it this way. If the Lakers could get that Anthony Davis and also get LeBron, is it possible that you can have both of those things? Because Davis had shown nothing. I mean, there was no signs of that guy anywhere that I saw in the games that I watched prior to LeBron going out with injury that Anthony Davis had that in him. He looked slow, sluggish, overweight, too big, looked nothing like the Anthony Davis when he was at his peak with New Orleans. And if that guy is there and LeBron comes back, now look, the team still, their supporting cast is awful, even though Westbrook has seemingly slid into the bench role and been more of a net positive than a net negative as a bench player, they still just don't have the roster around them. But if you get AD to average a 30 and 13, for the rest of the season, and you get LeBron back healthy, and you make that Buddy Hield, Miles Turner trade, or you find some other trade that can bring in a couple pieces. I'm not saying it's a title contender, but that team could potentially be a real team. But again, they're dysfunctional at this point. LeBron, over the last 4 years since he's been in LA, other than the bubble, he hasn't really been able to stay healthy for extended periods of time. And same thing for AD. And this four-game stretch, I would guess, is probably his best four-game stretch ever as a Laker, which is oddly weird that it happens when LeBron is not around.
Well,
so
To jump on that, Mike, Dave McManaman of ESPN just tweeted this out. Anthony Davis joins what player as the only player in league history with a stat line of 30 points, 20 rebounds, 5 blocks, and 4 steals. And AD happens to be the only player ever to do 30, 25, and 5 because he got 5 steals. What player did he join that's done this, Mike? It's a legend.
Okay, so I'd have two guesses. Back. Obviously, you always go Wilt would be one guess.
That's
the second guess. Second guess would be Akeem.
Nope. Played for Buffalo.
Bob McAdoo.
Bob McAdoo. There you go.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, so the Lakers are dysfunctional, and I think they're going to continue to be dysfunctional, but it's nice to see Anthony Davis play at this level because early in the season, he looked completely disinterested and out of shape, and it looked like the guy that we've seen in the last four games had completely disappeared, which is hard to believe because I think AD is, what, 29 maybe at this point? So you would hope that we haven't seen the best of him, but that's the way it kind of looked at the beginning of the season. So maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel for Lakers fans, but man, they've been dysfunctional. The Brooklyn Nets, thank goodness for their dysfunction. The fact that you go into Philly and lose that game to Tobias Harris and the rest of Philly's reserves and bench crew tonight, we don't even have to go into the complete clown show that thing has been. They have talent when you think about what Kyrie and Kevin Durant can be at their very, very best. And Simmons clearly has been better in the last two or three games. If you could get the best version of Ben Simmons and the best version of KD and Kyrie, you don't need to have a whole lot else around them to put together at least a playoff quality team. But as I said, from the very moment that KD and Kyrie got together, and then you added Harden to the mix, and then subtracted Harden and brought in Ben Simmons, there is just too many weird, wackadoo personalities that this thing just is not – I'm sorry, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. You could tell me it's going to work for 5 games, for 10 games, for 20 games. To think that that's going to work to the point where this team can ever meet their expectations of what they thought they were going to be able to do when they brought in KD and Kyrie, I'm sorry, it's not happening. And obviously the fact that Brooklyn is dysfunctional is good for the Cavs. So what's good for me is good for the Cavs, or what's good for the Cavs is good for me. So,
okay.
And then our last dysfunctional team is Philly. What cracks me up about the Philly discussion, and maybe it was proven, maybe it proved out tonight, I don't know, but the amount of talk that I heard on podcasts and read about in articles talking about Philly's improved roster and how good they were going to be, and they had finally put the right team around Joel Embiid. And then you look at, even as each of these guys has gone down, they were so reliant on Harden, Maxey, and then Embiid. It's just like, I just don't know what the rest of this team really is. Like PJ Tucker, I don't know if you heard, I was watching the game tonight, and they said that PJ Tucker was working on a streak of not having scored for 3.5 games. So I don't know if he ended up scoring in tonight's game or not. But that was their vaunted acquisition. And look, I like PJ Tucker. He's fine. When he was with Milwaukee, he was an important part of them winning that title. But you and I were mocking him all through the playoffs that he was averaging like 0.5 points per game in that title run. And so for Philly to tout him as like, hey, this is the guy that's going to put us over the top, I don't know. I just didn't buy it. And it seems like the rest of their depth just isn't there. And of course, my disdain for James Harden is well documented. And my distrust of Joel Embiid over the course of an 82-game season and through a 4-series playoff run, the guy's phenomenal. What he did in that 59-point game was 7 blocks. When he's at his best, there are very few guys in the league who are better than Joel Embiid, but I got to see it. I got to see it for 82 games, and I got to see it for 4 playoff series until it's at the point where it's, don't tell me about it, just show me. And until he does, I just think that Philly, they're just dysfunctional. And again, what's good for dysfunction for the Cavs is good for me.
Okay. I agree. All right, Mike, I don't know how you feel, but maybe we just narrow this down to 2 things we're not thankful for.
I think these are quick. I think these mine at least are pretty quick.
Okay. All right.
Mine are pretty quick. So let's hit all three, but we'll go quick.
Okay. All right.
More of a quick hitting round for the things we're not thankful for.
Okay, I'll let you go first, Mike, since I went first on the thankful things. Go ahead.
First thing I'm not thankful for is the Rudy Gobert trade. And I'll tell you why, because to this point, it seems like the ascendance of Anthony Edwards has been stalled. Now, maybe they're still going to figure it out, and maybe Anthony Edwards is going to continue the climb that we saw last year in the playoffs. But to this point, he has not been as good, or at least he has not improved in the way that we all thought that he would. And clearly, the team is not functioning the way that Minnesota fans and front office hoped that they would. So, I think if you're a Minnesota fan, unless you really love Rudy Gobert, I'm not sure that you're super happy with where this trade has taken you, and the fact that I don't know where you go from here if this doesn't work. Now, maybe you can say trading Karl Anthony Towns, and Cat hasn't proven himself to be a really good big game player, and his defense still leaves a lot to be desired. So maybe shipping him out brings you back some pieces that better fit around Anthony Edwards. But I'm just not sure. You're stuck with Gobert at this point, and I'm not sure that's a point where I would want to be if I had Anthony Edwards as my franchise cornerstone.
I agree. Gobert is not – that trade has not worked out. Whereas the Donovan Mitchell has worked for the Cavs,
the Rudy Gobert trade has not worked for the Timberwolves.
Now, we're 15 games in, so is it possible that it could change? Sure. But to this point, I just wouldn't be that excited about the next 5 years of Timberwolves basketball with Rudy Gobert as one of my linchpins.
I agree. All right.
Or Towns for that matter.
All right. I'm not thankful for lame national televised games. You knew I was going to go a little bit with the humor here, Mike. My God, do you know how many national televised games the Lakers have this year, Mike?
Too many. How about that?
It was 28 or 30, something like that. Somewhere between 28 and 32, so I heard. And, like, listen, last week there was the Cavs-Milwaukee. Now, it ended up not being necessarily the best game. We weren't terrible in the game. We didn't play great, but I don't even remember what the game is on. I'm flipping through the channels, and I see what's on ESPN, and I'm like, you mean to tell me they didn't flex this game into this? The two top, it was at the point we were the top. Well, I think we were three and Milwaukee was one, or we might have been slightly ahead of Boston still. Like, you mean to tell me that I'm not, this isn't even showing Cavs bias. Like, how would that not be flexed into some god awful game? I mean, I know these nationally televised games are only based on what markets are watching it, but like next week, once again, we're playing Milwaukee on Friday. They've got like Miami and Boston. Like no one in Miami gives a rat's behind about the Heat right now. Like their stadium's half empty. They've got 12 players on injured report. I mean, Jesus, I don't know. I think what's sad is that
as good as the league is and as many teams as there are that are fun and interesting to watch, it feels like when you look at the nightly schedule, you can always find two or three games. You're like, oh, I wouldn't mind seeing that game. I wouldn't mind watching that game.
Maybe that's their goal, to get people to buy league pass. I don't know.
Maybe. But there's always good games. There's always good games. It's just a matter of, yeah, which ones are on national TV. Well, we know the bias toward big markets and toward stars, so I get it. Part of me, again, when I'm watching a national game, like I like seeing maybe some teams that I don't see as often, right?
Yeah, I agree. So that's why I picked that one. All right, your turn.
All right, my second one, the things I'm not thankful for, Chet Holmgren's injury.
Well, Mike, that's like my second one. My second one is injury bugs around the league, so we can tie this together.
All right, so let me hit Chet real quick, and then I'll let you jump into a couple of your other things. So just from a standpoint with Chet, I think when you look at what Oklahoma City has done to this point, Shea's a borderline MVP candidate. He's averaging over 30 a game, and he's been unbelievable as their cornerstone piece of their franchise. And then you look at the rest of that roster – with Giddy and Dort, and if you were to plug in Chet Holmgren into that mix, Poku playing well. But if you plug Chet Holmgren into that mix, and who knows? I mean, the jury's still out on what Holmgren is or isn't and what kind of player he's going to be, but it sure would have been fun to find out what kind of player he was playing next to Shea, playing as well as he's played to this point. And the fact that Oklahoma City, look, they're 7-10, which is probably – in all honesty, they want to be competitive, but not too competitive. If they can get one more crack at Wembanyama or somebody else near the top of the draft to cement what they already have, that's probably where they want to be. But if you were to throw Holmgren into this mix, one, it'd just be interesting because of who he is as a prospect, and missing out on his rookie season is sad. But then also in the context of putting him with this fun Oklahoma City team, what Shea's been able to do. I'm sad that we didn't get to see him this year.
All right. And my point was this, Mike. Currently, I did count this up. Currently, across the league, how many players are in the league, Mike? Just how many teams are there, Mike?
30.
How many players are in a roster?
15.
So how many players are in the league?
So what would that be? 450?
450, okay. There are currently 113 players on the injury report. Now, my math's not good. Actually, it's really good. But like, that's like 25% of the players in the NBA are on the injury report. Now, some of it's day-to-day. I did not do the how many are day-to-day and how many are like extended absences. But That to me seems like a high number. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, so here's the thing. When I start thinking about this, obviously today we have way better nutrition than we've ever had. We have way better training and recovery than we ever have. We have guys sitting out games for injury recovery and for rest way more than we ever have. You think back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, where guys were traveling commercial planes and they were eating who knows what, and they were drinking smoking cigarettes and playing in arenas with smoke and all the different things, the shoes that they were playing in. And you had the one season where Wilt averaged 48 and a half minutes per game. And you wonder, what is it about? Is it the way the game is played at such a higher level of intensity, and the fact that because of all the spacing with the threes, the amount of running and pounding that guys have to put on their body during a game? Like, it'll be interesting to compare how much a player ran in a game in 1965 compared to how much a player runs in a game in 2022. And clearly, if you go back to when, at least when I was a kid, there was always so much talk about, the NBA, they just kind of go through the motions for the first three quarters and then they don't really start playing until the fourth quarter. I think if you go and you watch a game or you watch a game on TV, anybody who still tries to espouse that notion is completely insane. And I think it's been pretty well dispelled by analytics and all that stuff. You don't really hear people talking about that much anymore. But I wonder if it's, again, just the pounding of what it takes to play the game at such a high level today compared to what it may have taken in the 80s or the 70s. And this is just a theory. Again, I don't have anything to back this up in terms of stats or real information, but it does feel like with all the things that we know today about rest, recovery, nutrition, training, that it feels like we should have less injuries, not more. And it makes you wonder what to attribute that to. And I don't have the answer.
Yeah, I don't have the answer either. All right, your last one, Mike.
My anti-thankful is the way that the Celtics have been able to keep this ship afloat despite all the turmoil, despite missing Robert Williams. It's well known that I am not a big Celtics fan, and I'm a little disappointed that they've been able to overcome their internal difficulties to have as great a start to the season as they've had. So kudos to the Celtics for doing that, but I honestly can say I'm not happy about it. At least the Cavs have beat them twice.
Yeah, that was actually my original one, was the Celtics doing as well as they've done. But I'm going in left field, Mike.
All right.
Here we go.
All right.
I am not thankful that the World Cup is happening right now and taking the thunder from the NBA and the NFL season. My God. My students, the last 2 days, and I know you probably didn't have this problem with your students,
World wouldn't Cup, stop is that, talking. Wait, is that billiards?
Oh, God. Listen, I am flabbergasted. I mean, at the amount of kids that actually cared about the World Cup. They're like, it's something that happens every 4 years. It only happens every 4 years. And I'm like, well, if as many of you cared about the World Cup as there were people cared about the presidential elections and actually important things, then, like, I cannot stand the World Cup. I cannot stand soccer. I will watch a game, maybe. I was updating the kids on Team USA yesterday. What a terrible draw that was. And I heard about it all day today from my soccer player kids. But, man, I could care less about the World Cup. I don't give a rat's behind. And All the ESPN, I'm getting all these alerts about the World Cup and Twitter. I log into Twitter and all I see is about World Cup this and World Cup that. I don't see anything. I'm missing a lot of NBA stuff. So I'm frustrated, Mike. I think I'd be more invested in the World Cup if it was a summertime thing, because then basketball season's different. Like, baseball and basketball are a different breed. And if it's baseball season, maybe I'd be more invested in the World Cup. Because baseball is 162 games. They're playing basically every day. And, you know, there's just not as much, you know, I don't know. I probably would watch it, but there's just so much other stuff to watch. And now I'm stuck about hearing is the World Cup. So
That's what I'm not thankful for, the World Cup during Thanksgiving week.
Is Pele playing in this? Maradona?
Freddie Adu?
Yeah, Freddie Adu. I like it.
I brought up Freddie Adu to one of my students.
Benny Dargle?
Well, they were like, I was like, does Freddie Adu still play? And they're like, who's that? I'm like,
Otto Worf?
Mia Hamm?
Brandy Chastain? Just keep naming soccer players until we run out of guys.
Lionel Messi? Cristiano Ronaldo?
Ronaldo?
He just left the Manchester United today. Saw that.
Okay. All right, keep going.
What was the guy that headbutted the guy?
Zidane.
There you go, Zidane.
Alexi Lalas. Landon
Donovan. Did you say that already?
No. Brad Friedel. He was a goalie. What's the guy's name that right now? Pulisic.
Yeah. Wow, look at you. You know you're up on your soccer, Mike. You're letting things
out.
Come on,
keep going, man.
Billiards.
You got any more male soccer players?
No. I got Hope Solo. Does that count? She's
no,
female.
That's a woman. No, you can't do that. All right, so we're out. Anyway, yeah, I have no interest in the World Cup whatsoever. Soccer is organized kickball, man. Let's move on.
Mike blames soccer for water bottles.
Yeah, soccer started it all. Soccer started the whole mess. I was out when after one of my daughter's soccer games, a parent brought a 10-pack sleeve of Oreos as the snack. That was enough for me to get out. I'm done.
Well, listen, to be fair, when I played baseball, we would get Dairy Queen after every game.
Okay, like, man, an ice cream cone or a 10-pack sleeve of Oreos?
Dude, I smash Oreos all the time. I love Oreos.
A 10-pack? Are you serious?
I've eaten a whole thing of Oreos in a day.
Oh, my God. That is disgusting.
It's delicious.
Ugh, that's gross.
All right, let's leave it there, Mike.
All right, let's end it there. You don't want to have any Browns talk?
No, nope.
No?
No, zero, zilch, okay. Nada. I don't even want to.
I'm just proud that I'm a fan of that organization and just the high quality product they put on the field every day.
I didn't send you the text. Someone photoshopped the clown guy from the Bengals game onto the field and said, the Browns have painted over the elf with the clown. I'll see if I can find it and send it to you. It's pretty good.
That sounds good.
But maybe make that the...
I think we should make the helmet into like the wig, the rainbow wig. That's what we should do. That would be perfect. That should be our city edition jersey for the Browns.
There are clowns everywhere. The rainbow wig
I changed my
one fantasy team to the Cleveland Clowns.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. We're leaving it there. All right, everybody, thanks for listening tonight. We really appreciate it. Hopefully you enjoyed this Thanksgiving edition of the Hoopheads Pod. We hope you and your family have a very, very happy Thanksgiving. We will catch you for our next regular interview episode, which is with Del Leonard. That one will be coming out on Friday. We had our roundtable episode go out on Monday, talking about how coaches assign their bench roles. So please make sure you check those two episodes out. We appreciate you being a part of our audience. Make sure you follow and subscribe to the pod.
Do you appreciate that picture that I just sent you, Mike?
Let me see. I'm getting to it right now. Yeah, I like it. That's nice. I like it. That looks very, very good. It's very enjoyable to have a clown in the middle of the field. All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. We truly appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HoopheadsPod. Subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.